Our next guest on Downtown played Murray Slaughter for 7 seasons on the Mary Tyler Moore Show. He was, of course, Captain Steubing in The Love Boat. Was in a number of television shows and films like Kelly's Hero and Operation Petticoat. Is the author of a wonderful memoir, This Is Your Captain Speaking. And we're happy to have him join us as we continue to celebrate the 50th anniversary of the Mary Tyler Moore Show. Gavin McLeod, thank you so much for being with us today.
Well, you bet. I mean, 50 years. Wow, what an anniversary.
It is incredible. Yeah, we want to talk a lot about the Mary Tyler Moore Show, but want to get some background on you as well, because you've got such a fascinating story. And it all began in Pleasantville, New York. And am I right that you did your first play, your first acting in kindergarten?
I was 4 years old. Oh, yes. It was a Mother's Day play.
Do you remember what part you played?
Yes, I was the lead. I was a cute little boy. I had a lot of hair and I won a Charming Child contest. I'm kind of embarrassed. My mother had that picture in a frame until the day she died, and which was when she was 97 years old. Now, and so I had a lot of hair. I was cute. I was in the kindergarten, Roselle Avenue School, which is now a condo complex. And I don't remember my teacher's name in the kindergarten, but it was a Mother's Day play, and I was this little boy that wanted to get something for his mother, and I didn't know what to do. I didn't have any money or anything else, and so I said, oh, I'll go through the forest, and I'll find someone to help me. And so all my little classmates were different animals in the forest, and the biggest kid was Jack Moore. I remember him so well. And he was the biggest kid, and he must have been, I was always the youngest, so he was either 5 or 6, but he was big and rotund. And he said, yeah, well, and he played a bear. And he said, the thing you should give your mother, and it won't cost you anything or anything, is a wonderful bear hug. Well, I jumped up and down and was so excited about that. And I went back and saw each kid, another who played previous animals, all the telling them, I'm all going to give my mother. And Barbara Borchers played my mother. She was my girlfriend in high school years later. And I gave her a big hug, and the audience went crazy. You know, we were little kids. We hardly knew who we were. And I heard applause for the first time. And I talk about that in my book. I wrote a book, This Is Your Captain Speaking.
And it's a wonderful book.
I hear that applause. That's the first time I heard applause. And I guess in my little mind, and it meant somebody liked me. They liked me. And if that's what it took to be liked, I want to do more of that. And so I was in plays from that moment on until here I am. I just finished my last play about 2 years ago down here. And I don't know if it's going to be my last one, but I'll be 90, you know. And so a lot of those creative things are not as forceful as they used to be.
Now, your first Broadway appearance was in Hatful of Rain with Ben Gazzara, Shelley Winters, and you still remember your one line. I know you do.
Back up, Johnny. Back up like a mule. Yes, and you know, that's when that was such a thrilling experience. I was the only guy in there. What happened was, it was a big smash. Walter Winchell called it the best play in 10 years. It was an Actors Studio project. Everybody in it was from the Actors Studio. Mike Gozzo wrote it, and it was called Johnny Had a Yo-Yo. And Jay Julian saw it and said, I think it should be, we can make some money with this. And so he eventually got Shelley. They needed a big name, and they got the theater, and that's when they opened, and the reviews were sensational. I was working as a cashier in Jim Downey's restaurant in New York, and so I knew all the people, all the actor studios, actors used to hang out there and everything. And I studied with Frank Cassell, who directed that play. And he was Lee Strasberg's right-hand man in the studio. And so what happened was Tony Franciosa played the brother, Harry Guardino, wanted to study him, and his reviews were, it was a very colorful character. And he got movie offers. So after a couple of months, he was going to go and make movies. And Harry Guardino moved up to that part, the Brother Polo, if you know that show. And they had everybody moved up, and then they had an opening to understudy and to play Man in the Hallway, he was called. He was just called Man. And I auditioned, and I got it. And that was one of the greatest theater moments I've ever had. When Jay Julian, the producer, came in, I was behind the cash register in Jim Downey's restaurant doing work, and he said, "Well, kid," he said, "you got your first Broadway part." I said, "Holy mackerel!" Oh man, I couldn't sleep. I couldn't anything else. And that was the beginning of it. I was with that for about a year and a half. And ironically, last night on the television here, I just saw Vivian Blaine in Guys and Dolls.
I was watching that too on TCM.
Yeah, and Vivian replaced Shelley Winters, and that's when Steve McQueen came in. There were a lot of replacements, but then we went on the road with Peter Mark Christman. I was with that for about a year and a half, I think. And I finally came to, we played L.A., we were on the road, we were in New York for a while, and for months, and then went through the whole summer, and then we were on the road, and we played San Francisco, then L.A., and in L.A., I got an offer to do a movie play. I was playing a drug pusher. And I said, "Well, but I can't leave the play. I wouldn't do that. I had a contract." And so after we closed in Boston years later, because we had some replacements come in, and Diane Ladd came in, and she was only like 20, 21 years old then. And she played Putski on the road, and McQueen left. Yeah, and so Ben came back in the play. Ben Gazzara finished up, and then we finished up in Boston. And then I came to the. I had that one offer to do the movie, so I told my wife, I said, "I think I have some action on the West Coast." So we had one friend that knew one agent, Lou Irwin, and. Lou Irwin said he would see me, so I said it's worth it, because I've been bald since I was 21, and I bought a secondhand hairpiece that's in my book too, and that's how I got my first Broadway play and off Broadway and those because of somebody else's hairpiece that I paid $125 for, and so I finally went to the West Coast and. I went to that one agent, and who do I? The first one I meet in the waiting room is Ted Knight.
Except wow. He wasn't Ted Knight then; he was still Thaddeus Konopka, right?
No, he was always Ted Knight. he wasn't Thaddeus Konopka. But he had a great story too about his life. I just loved him to pieces. Anyway, so he tells me. "Hi, kid. How nice to see you." I said, "Hey, I just come in town. I don't know what to do or anything." He says, "The first thing you got to do is you got to get a business manager." I said, "But I don't have any money." He says, "I don't have any money either, but I've got a business manager." I said, "Things are strange on the West Coast." and I got that. He and I had Sam Choke up, that same business manager, for years and years. And Ted and I became instant friends. And we had been friends since 1957. And then Mary started in 19... When did Mary start? In
fall of 1970. But you knew... We're talking with Gavin McLeod here on Downtown. You knew Mary because you had done the Dick Van Dyke Show several years earlier.
Yeah, I did two of those. I did Empress Carlotta's Necklace. And people really like it. Still get mail about that. And then I did another one, which ironically I never got a chance to shoot because I had an infection and I was in the hospital. Well, we were shooting it. It was a very cute story about Rosemarie and the delicatessen owner downstairs. And he used to have a crush on Rosemarie. And he used to send her notes in the middle of sandwiches. And, can I see you? Oh, it's very cute. And so... And we rehearsed, and then it was a holiday, so we had like a four-day weekend, and I got violently ill. They put me in the hospital, and I was unable to shoot it, and I was sick. I was unable to shoot that show. But I work with Carl Reiner a lot, and that whole group. And that's where I met Mary on the first one. And so after I came back from doing Kelly's Heroes, I started rehearsing Carousel, the musical, and I got a call from my agent about the Mary Tyler Moore show. I said, oh, is she doing a show? I said, I love her. Who doesn't, you know? And he said, well, they want to see you. They want to send you some scripts. I said, oh, fabulous. So they sent me two scripts. One was Rhoda's mother, and one was the pilot. And the writing was just, I was on the floor. It was so good.
But they wanted you for Lou Grant, right?
That's what it said. It said on the script, Gavin for the part of Lou Grant. And I read that. And because I had worked with her, I think if I hadn't worked with her, I might have felt different about it. I said, I wouldn't believe myself being her boss. I'm more of a contemporary. I wouldn't believe myself. If I wouldn't believe myself, I would expect an audience to believe myself. So what else could I play in that? And I knew I couldn't play Ted. I couldn't play that character. But Murray, he didn't have too much to do, but he had some very kind of cynical, kind of funny, biting lies and stuff. I said, well, maybe I could do that. So when I went in, I met Jim and Alan and that fabulous woman from CBS, Ethel Winant.
Ethel Winant, yeah.
Oh, yeah, she was great. I did a lot of plays for her out on the West Coast. But anyway, she produced. And so they said, well, you know, how was the shoot? They knew I had just come back from Yugoslavia. And I said, that's okay, but I'm doing Carousel now and all that stuff. So I read the Lou Grant, and I got my laughs and everything else. But, you know, I didn't think it was right for me. So I had my hand on the door, and I said, you know, you guys, I said, I really like that character of Murray. Oh, yeah, but he's supporting. I said, I don't care. I said, he said, you want to read something, Jim? And I said, sure. So I read some of those lines and that they had in those two scripts, and they were laughing and just enjoying themselves. Okay, well, thanks a lot. See you later. I got to go to rehearsal. And so as I went outside, I saw Ed pacing up and down, Ed Asner. So he was going in right after me. And so I went to rehearsal, and that afternoon, my agent came over. It was just a few hours later, and he signaled me to come out, and I eventually saw him, and he said, Gavin, and they want you for the Mary Tyler Moore show. I said, oh, Alex, wow, isn't that great? I said, do you know what part? He said, is there a guy named Murray in that? I said, yes, there's a guy named Murray. And I was Murray for 7 years. And that's when a lot of stuff happened for a lot of us.
Well,
seven years on the Mary Tyler Moore Show.
For my money, one of the great television shows of all time. And I have to tell you, Murray Slaughter might be my favorite character in television history because so funny, but so compassionate. I don't know that there's ever been a more decent character in television than Murray Slaughter.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, the show isn't about Murray, so how are they going to write any shows about him? So they finally had the idea of having a wife and having him be everyman, having him be the brown bagger that never gets much attention but puts his time in and has families and things. And that's when they brought Joyce in.
Yep.
And she played Marie. And we kind of exemplified a lot of stuff that was going out there in the reality of the world, you know. I remember one show where Murray was working late and all, and she thought that he was cheating on her. And the thing was, he had another job driving at night to make money to buy her something. And I don't know, Murray, a lot of the mail I get from people is they like his cynical wit, but they mention he and Betty White a lot. And then they mention how he exemplified the brown bagger. I mean, every city I used to travel for the network went on off times, and I would go to different cities, the newsrooms in the cities. And they were all Murrays. There was a Murray in every town we ever went to. And we got to L.A. when I did one in L.A. The guy says, my name is even Murray. and he was the writer, you know. And they brought their lunch in brown bags, just like he did. They had families trying to hold things together, and they were like the voice of the news. That they were the ones that were writing it all.
I want to talk about a few very special episodes that I think that feature Murray. One is when you became briefly Sue Ann's producer.
Oh, that was a show and a half, yeah. I want to tell you how great Betty White is. When you want to talk about that, I'll tell you.
Oh, please do.
Okay. Well, you know, she emasculates him. He wants to make extra money to buy something for the kid or his wife or something, whatever he's doing. And he becomes her assistant. And so she does everything to emasculate this guy. And the truth of the matter is, at the end of the show, when she's got him in a bridal gown, this poor guy in a bridal gown, and the cake comes in. And he picks her up, sits her in the cake, and she goes down on the floor. Well, the truth of the matter is, we only had one cake. We had to do that in one take. Wow. In front of an audience. And they didn't have a second cake around in case anything happened. Nobody ever thought what could happen to a cake. And so Betty, no matter what happened, she had to ride that cake down between her legs. And I used to kid her about it, I said, you practiced your whole life for this one scene, haven't you? She's great. You know, she's 98 now. She's still one of the fabulous people of all time. And anyway, so, yeah, so what? This is what happened. So the audience is there. We've never had a chance to practice with the real cake. I lift her up and sit her on it, and she rides it down. Well, and then we talked it through. Now the audience is there. Now the show is getting near its climax, and he finally can't take it anymore. He lifts her up, puts her in the cake, and she rides it down, and the audience went crazy. Little did we know, because of not being able to rehearse with the real cake, when I sat her down on the table with a cake on the, she hurt her back.
Oh. Wow.
And she's still. So when it was over, I said, oh, you know, listen to that. I mean, all that stuff. She said, I think I hurt myself. I said, what do you mean, Betty? She said, I hurt myself when you put me on the table, you know. We never had the cake to rehearse with, but she never stopped. This is what I mean. You talk about a trooper. She rode that cake down like she was pouring tea for the Queen of England. There's a great line from Pajama Game that I love, where they make pajamas, and she says, oh, she's wonderful. And she says, she can sew a button on a fly like she's pouring tea for the Queen of England. Well, I always think Betty does a lot of things like she's pouring tea for the Queen of England. And she was just wonderful to work with. She's one of the best of all time. Yeah. But she really got hurt. She really got hurt. Nobody ever knew it. I didn't know it until later. But the show was over about 6 minutes after what the incident happened. But you would never know it. And, yeah, we still got a lot of mail on that show. I think one of the funniest things regarding Betty and her is when she was sick. And Ted goes to see her. I think Lou and I went at least take a turn seeing her. And Ted comes in.
When you see the bedroom for the first time?
Yes, and he's got his hat on, and he looks up at the mirror and starts doing some business with his hat. Looking up at the mirror there, the audience is finally realizing what's going on. And then with the bed, the vibrating bed. Oh, Betty. Betty's like, that was so wonderful. And, you know, she and Alan used to come to see our show every Friday night.
Right.
Because he and Grant were very good friends. And whoever thought that she'd be a regular and be Sue Ann Nivens, be this classical character. And then I played with her. She did a Love Boat. She and Alan did a Love Boat together. And then he passed. And then she came back on with a classical thing. She and Carol Channing played sisters on the Love Boat. And they did one number together that was sensational. Yeah.
One of the great episodes of the show, and I think in all of television history, is Chuckles Bites the Dust. And
no doubt about it. No matter where I go, that's always mentioned. I go to conventions, they're actually Christian conventions, and the ref's sitting around having dinner, and ultimately somebody brings up Chuckles Bites the Dust.
An absolutely brilliant episode, but as I understand, the episode before you, I think your last rehearsal, it was, 4 or 5 minutes short, and that sort of gave you and Ed free rein to really use those zingers about Chuckles.
Oh, yeah. That one line, Murray starts laughing in the room. He says, "What's so funny?" He said, "It could have been a catastrophe." He says, "You know how hard it is to stop after just one peanut." Well, you know, come and the audience. So when we finally had all the laughs, we waited. When the laughs came, everything came. It was perfect timing. I'll tell you what show was very meaningful, too, was the last one we ever did. When we had to say goodbye and Mary closed that door for the last time. And that was 7 years, and all of us had been working, most of us, our lifetimes, making livings and all that, but never in a show like that, never with that kind of a love, that kind of creativity, that kind of joy. And what she did for Women's Lib, I mean, there's very few women you meet in television that said they weren't influenced. I mean, when we finally did Oprah's show, I sat next to Oprah and Mary came in. Oprah went crazy.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
When Mary showed up in person. Did you ever see that one?
I did, and she was so moved by that, and had her own version that she shot. That was great. And I love the message that you all left behind on the soundstage, where there's a plaque there that reads, "On this stage, a company of loving and talented friends produced a television classic." That really says it all.
It's very meaningful. I went back to do that 70s show. I did the one with Dick Van Patten, and then they did one with Mary and me, and then we took pictures under that plaque. Yeah, because that was the same soundstage that we did our show in all those years, but then the 70s show, they had more sets, so it was even larger, but it was same dressing room and all that, and it brought back a lot of memories. Yeah.
I understand, too, that one of my favorite episodes is when Murray believes that he's in love with Mary, and it was such a beautiful episode, and one of those lines of Murray's was what they used to wrap up Mary's memorial service when she passed.
How did you know that?
I did my research, sir.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I did that. John Tinker, Grant's youngest son, is a very good friend of mine. And he used to go up, he and his wife, to see Mary when she was ill. And he would tell me how she was. He would call and tell me. Because he was in North Carolina and she was up in Connecticut. And when she passed, he told me about that, and Patty and I. And then after the funeral, he called me and he was weeping. And he said, "Gavin, you have to hear this." I said, "I don't know if I can take it, John." Mm. It's very emotional. I mean, she was such a wonderful leader and a wonderful person. We just loved her. And he said, "But this is what I want to tell you. There are very few people at the funeral. They just showed her body once in New York, and she was going to be buried the next day in Connecticut. And her husband was Jewish, so they bury you fast." And he said, "So there was about maybe 7 of us there. And Bernadette Peters was there, who she was a very good friend of Mary's. They had an animal thing together that they did to support animals and all that." And said, as they were lowering her casket into the ground, they said one of your lines. I said, "John, what could I have said as Murray?" He said, "Bernadette said this, 'Mary, Everyone knows how beautiful you are on the outside, but I know how beautiful you are on the inside. And those were the last words said over her when she descended into the earth there. I was so moved by that. And then I remember when I told her that. I remember that show when I think he's 40 or 45 years old. He wakes up and he's. I think this is some of the stuff in the series that he said now. And I realized I was in love with Mary. I thought I was in love with Mary. And I remember I had to tell her in this one scene. And you know, of all the years, what it was, 7 years on that show, I got more mail on that episode than I had ever done. And most of the mail said, the guy that would be written by men, the same thing happened to them in the office. They spent more time in the office than they did at home, and they really felt they were in love with the girl they worked with in the office. So they identified so much with that episode of Mary.
We're talking with Gavin McLeod here on Downtown. Well, we have to talk about the Love Boat. Not everybody gets a second act, and that became such a huge hit. 9 seasons, you got to be not just the star of the show, but also one of the wonderful things about it is that Aaron Spelling gave you the flexibility to continue to do the stage work that you love so much.
I know, and he was so wonderful to work for. As a matter of fact, when we made the pilot, and I thought it was terrific, but they said that somebody said, "Oh, they had might have made it once before, and nobody went for it." I said, "Well, maybe they'll go for it this time. I don't know." And I had worked with Bernie Capel on the Mary Tyler Moore Show, and I saw all of his work on Get Smart and so forth. He was a gifted actor, and so I liked the whole idea: 3 different stories with happy endings. Because I love happy endings. I like to feel good when things are over, and so. I met with Aaron, and because I had other, after the Mary Tyler Moore Show, the show is so hot, you have offers for other series because they think you're going to bring in an audience. And I had 2 other series that are offered at NBC, and one was Andy Griffith's producer. I went to see him just before I saw Aaron that same day, Aaron Rubin. He was a fabulous guy. And they all had, there were 3 different shows. One was about these guys that had, throw their hands up in the society, and they want to live in these homes that keep you alive downtown L.A. For a lot of alcoholics and things, and who people who haven't achieved anything in life, and they criticize everybody for their accomplishments. It was too negative for me. Another one was a cowboy show with Jeff Bridges, and it was like Murray, only in a cowboy suit. Another one was an hour show about the Depression in the United States. And it was in Pittsburgh, and I was the father. And in 1 hour, there wasn't even a snicker of a laugh. So I said no, and then my agent said, they have this Love Boat, Aaron Spelling wants. So I said, have you read it? And he said, yes. I said, what do you think about it? And this is the truth. He says, I think it sucks. You want to read it? Sure, I want to read it. So they sent it to me. Patty and I brought it down. I had a little place in Palm Springs, and she looked at it first. And she came out, and she says, Gavin, I only read 20 pages. I want to tell you, I really like it, and you're going to be the captain. This could be something. So I read it, and the interesting thing about the pilot, they had 2 funny stories, but the third story was about an old Jewish guy, and this is what really got me, about this old Jewish guy who was very, very ill, and he wants to be buried in the cemetery in Long Island, but there's not enough space. So he says, I'll go on the ship, I'll die, they'll throw me overboard, and that'll be it. And so Phil Silvers played that. Wow. But what happens was, in the real story, when we finally shot it, he comes on the ship thinking, oh, he's going to die, but he meets this woman. And life starts in for him again. And it was, what's her name, who did, James Whitmore's wife. She was a wonderful stage actress. She played this part, and they danced together, and all of a sudden he feels like he's alive again, and he feels good, and they're talking about the future and things, and just before they get into port, when they're home, she goes to his room, and he's dead.
No.
Well, that got me, and you know, I said, I'm Irish, I cry at the drop of a hat, and I cried over that. I said, well, if he can make you laugh at two shows and cry at another one, that's good entertainment. And so Aaron said, that's exactly what we want to do, and that's what I signed on. And so I tested with, they didn't have a Julie McCoy, and I tested with 11 actors. Dick Kynan directed all those tests with these actresses from all over the world, those stage actresses. They were all wonderful. Anybody could have done it, but they weren't happy with the girl. In fact, when we all got together, all the guys for the first reading, we didn't have Julie McCoy. And Aaron Spelling's wife, Candy, said there was a girl that did one day on Charlie's Angels. They wanted what they called a Today girl. And so they looked at Lauren, Cindy Tweez, and that's it. She was waiting on tables. The next day, she was the star of a television series. And that was the beginning of that. And what happened was, we make the pilot. And then Debbie Reynolds calls me. She's doing Annie Get Your Gun in San Francisco. Gala Champions directing. And then she's coming to L.A. with it. It's going to be a long run. I said, oh, my God. And so I went to see them. I did a couple of numbers. And they wanted me to do it. And I said, oh, Aaron, how can... He said, all right, you got to do it. He said, you have to do it, so we'll do both. So what we did for the first couple of months, I would be shooting the Love Boat, and at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, one of his drivers would drive me to LAX. I'd get on a plane, I'd fly to San Francisco. Somebody would meet me, usually James Mitchell, the wonderful dancer, choreographer, who was Gower's assistant, drive me to the stage. They'd have food for me. I'd do the show. I'd fly home. My wife used to say, there's a man that gets in my bed at 2 o'clock in the morning and leaves at 6. I hope to God it's my husband. So I'd have to get up to do the series. And so they did that for 5 days a week. The weekends I could stay in San Francisco. And so then we came to L.A. We were a big hit down there. Debbie was very good in Rob Fresnel, some wonderful B.B. Osterwald, some wonderful Art Lund, great, great performers were in that show. And Gower directed it beautifully. So that was that. That was the beginning of the Love Boat for me.
Well, and you worked with so many talented people on the show, including old friends like Shelley Winters and Ernest Borgnine. But we had a listener send us a picture and wanted to know if you could explain what it was about. And it was a picture of you as Captain Steubing with Andy Warhol.
Oh yes, Andy Warhol came on our show together with the Temptations and a very famous wrestler. I forget what his name was, but he was the most famous wrestler at that time. They were the guest stars
wow.
for the week.
And you have...
But Andy Warhol, yes, he and I, Doug Kramer, who was our executive producer, had a big, big party for him at his house before we started shooting. And a lot of people in the theater came and everything. I mean, Andy Warhol, he was very shy and very quiet. And then they had the idea of he and I should be doing, and the picture, that the picture was on the outside. It's been a lot of magazines. Andy's got a book out called The Party, and there's pictures of us together in it and his experience. He's very quiet and shy. I spent one lunch hour taking pictures of him. He was in black. And I was in white, in a white uniform, saluting. And that was on the cover of a lot of things, L.A. Magazine and all that jazz. And, yeah, and I met him. He was very quiet, very shy. He was surrounded with some of his other friends who were more alive. And we eventually, when I did Gigi in Pittsburgh, Civic Light Opera, we went to the Warhol Museum, because that's where he's from, Pittsburgh, and his museum is just fabulous with the artwork and the history of his kind of stuff. So Andy Warhol, but he was not a great conversationalist. He didn't talk a lot, but you can see he was clocking everything. He was a very smart kind of guy.
You've maintained this relationship with Princess Cruises for all these years. And did I see that you were part of a big event back in February, setting Guinness record for renewing marriage vows? Is that right?
Yes, we just did that before the coronavirus hit. It was in February when we went out. We went to Florida, and we were on one ship. And in order to break the record, it was numbers. And so we had to do it on two other ships simultaneously. And it was our ship was packed out with people. It was a wonderful experience. We had done it once before, renewing wedding vows, but never of this proportion. And so we did. We broke the Guinness Book of Records of renewing wedding vows on a cruise ship because we had to do the three ships simultaneously. It's hard to, because another ship was in the Caribbean with us in a different area. We never saw it. Another one was in Mexico. So it was different hours, and they had a judge on each ship, and it was very, very official. And it was very... very moving for a lot of people. I met a lot of interesting people. Some I've just written to again who corresponded with me. You meet interesting people on cruises who've had fabulous lives. And Joyce and I have talked about Joyce, played my wife on the Mary Tyler Moore Show, getting back to that.
We had Joyce on a few months ago talking about playing Marie.
Yeah, she's absolutely fabulous. Well, they've talked to us, the local NBC outlet here has talked about us doing a radio program together.
Well, you guys are neighbors in Palm Springs, right?
Well, I'm in Palm Desert, and she's in the next community over. She's not here now. She's gone for the 3 months for the summer. She lost her husband 2 years ago, and it was very sad, Roger, when he died. She's wonderful. I'm crazy about her. And I watch Perry Mason's to see her all the time. I watch Perry Mason almost every night to see my friends who are no longer here. And Patty said to me, "Don't you ever get tired of it?" I said, "No, I don't." Because I loved Raymond. He came and did a Love Boat 2 years later, even after Ironsides. And, it's just, I've been blessed with having a wonderful life, exceeding much more than I ever thought I would ever. I thought I would just do a Broadway play and then just go teach someplace because I have some degrees. But that's not the way it worked out.
Well, we're glad it didn't. Gavin, thank you so much. I have been a fan of your work for so many years. It's been an absolute delight to talk with you this afternoon. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Rich. Thank you so much.